Do you ever ask yourself what's preventing you from achieving your goals or what's interfering with your happiness? Then perhaps it's time to check out our sponsor, BetterHelp.com. Guys, we know the last 2 years have been a whirlwind of emotions, but the good news is that one, you're not alone in this, and two, there is help out there if you need it. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with their own licensed professional therapist. You can connect with them in a safe and private online environment, so it's convenient, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. This is not a self-help line. It is professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room or leave your house. They have services offered around the world, and they have professional counselors that are experts in depression, stress, anxiety, relationship issues, anger, family conflicts, and so much more. Everything that you share with them is confidential, and this is a safe, convenient, and professional way of getting help that you need. We want you to start living a happier life today. So as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/listener. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/listener.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna, your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to season 3, episode 59 of the Outlap F1 podcast. I am your host, James, along with my wonderful co-host, Andy. We have John and Deanna out. So we are podcast at half strength. but we are going to attempt to do the end of season grades and reviews. And then hopefully next week's episode, we can have John and Deanna kind of chime in with some of their thoughts about the things we said or things they wanted to add in for that episode.
This season was so epic as it was. If we had all four of us on, it might be a 4-hour episode. So this may actually work out to be in our favor.
Especially since I'm have to be awake in about 4.5 hours. So I do appreciate the sleep I'll get from them not being on. But we'll hear from them again soon, I'm sure. But Andy, how are you doing over there? Is your whole life covered in ice like mine is?
Pretty much. Last night was very, very interesting around the Chicago area. We had this lovely freezing rain event. So, like, you could not tell where the ice was. And my car, which hates winter anyway, had a really fun trip down my parents' driveway trying to leave last night. So, it's all fine. There's luckily no damage or anything. But, yeah, I think it went down perpendicular to the driveway, which is not the way that you'd expect it to do, but fun.
Yeah, the main roads were all right. They are warm enough, but any sidewalk or driveway was just a sheet of thin ice. It's mm-hmm. Now I think it's about 2 degrees out there, so that ice isn't going anywhere.
No, not till Tuesday or Wednesday, I guess. So we're gonna get to do this all over again.
But so is winters in Chicago. We're used to it. Makes us tough, right?
I guess that's what they tell me.
All right, so before we get into it, I need to remind everybody where you can find us on social media, which includes Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube, all at Outlap F1 podcast. You can always check out our link tree on our Twitter profile. You can also do us a solid by clicking the like and subscribe buttons on YouTube, or click the 5-star button if you're on Apple Podcasts. And I believe Spotify now allows ratings, or that maybe they're just beta testing that, but that's coming soon. So when you see that, make sure you give us a good review there as well. We do truly appreciate it. You can always email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. Currently, we're looking for any kinds of Ask Us Now questions, non-F1 related, I guess, just to get to know us better and for us to kind of share some of our non-F1 thoughts and views on things. But we're going to try and do that next week. So any questions you have, send them to us. You can also check out our website at www.outlapf1.com, where you'll find all of our old episodes and tweets, including the F1 for Beginners episode. That was all the way back in early 2021, but we will have a new one here pretty soon, probably sooner than than you might believe, and it'll come, I'm sure, a lot faster than we anticipate. But that'll be the 2022 version, so make sure you get ready for that, and you can kind of direct.
It's less than, I think it's less than 50 days or something like that until testing.
That's crazy. And it's like, I was just thinking about that, too. I was like, man, it's not going to be too much longer. We're actually going to see, like, actual liveries and not these just teasers anymore. So it's going to be here before we know it, and I know you're excited. I know I'm excited, so I'm sure you guys are as well. And, of course, if you've been trying to get your buddies into F1, and maybe they started towards the end of last year as things got really crazy, you can direct them to that episode each and every year, because we want to put those out to kind of help all the new fans out there. Of course, you can also check out Relap with Deanna. She's got her Abu Dhabi recap up there and the Way Too Early 2022 predictions, which I was a big-time fan of. If you've seen them, you know why. If not, what are you waiting for? Go watch it. All right, so again, Outlap F1 Nation stepping up yet again. Andy, I'll let you do the honors here.
Yeah, big shout-out to my cousin, Cody. Cody Walsh, for becoming a monthly contributor. Thank you very much. He is our member of the podcast, but not really a member of the podcast. He was with us at Circuit of the Americas, so he got up at 05:30 with the rest of us to get there as early as we did, and he's been a great sport throughout it, and he listens to us, he says, every week. So thank you very much, and again, thank you to everybody else, and that includes Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Richard Cole, Travis Colby, Tim Brown, Hillary LaRose, Mary Brown, and of course, Matt Polanski from the Red Sector MotoGP podcast. If you'd like to join the Outlap F1 Nation, please do check out our Support the Pod page on both our website and our Anchor page as well.
Thank you, Andy. Of course, you can also check out Manscaped to get 20% off and free shipping by using code Outlap. That's OUTLAP. And then a new sponsor to the show. Very happy to have them with us. And that is betterhelp.com/listener, where you can join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/listener. Make sure you check that out. Excellent service there. Your physical health is very important, but your mental health is just as much, if not more important. So make sure you get the help that you need. All right, Andy, now that that is all out of the way, we can get to just one news item we have. And for that, I'll hand it off to you.
Yeah, Otmar Szafnár is out of a job at Aston Martin, and there wasn't really any sort of immediate replacement named. They said that they were going to continue to manage internally. If you ask me, I think this is where Martin Whitmarsh, who they've already hired, just kind of slides right on in, and you wait a couple months, and then you'll probably see some sort of that announcement. It felt like it was kind of fait accompli once they brought Whitmarsh back in. Yeah, so this isn't super surprising, but the timing of it, I think, sort of was. Yeah. I would have expected it either, you know, not necessarily in the dead of winter, but that's when they chose to announce it.
Yeah, like you said, a little bit surprising, but we kind of had the writing on the wall there a couple months ago, like you mentioned. So not super surprising. I'm sure he's going to get another job because I am a huge fan of his. I think he's done really good things at Aston Martin, formerly Racing Point there, Force India, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I mean, I would take him at Ferrari in a heartbeat, but I don't see them making that move anytime soon.
I mean, Andy's American, so that's another angle to root for. And he's been always, I think, a really, for the most part, a pretty stand-up guy. The only part I ever thought he looked kind of squirrely was when he was trying to defend the copying, not so copying of the Mercedes brake ducts. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you made the decision and you went with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that news there should mirror some of the news we get in America tomorrow for what should be Black Monday for a lot of NFL head coaches, which hopefully includes the one and only Matt Nagy. But that's
it will that I can almost guarantee you. It's do we get the general manager along with him? That's basically what I'm going to wake up to tomorrow and start refreshing Twitter.
Yeah,
my little side project. Our Chicago Sports Experience podcast that I do with another buddy of mine. We will be recapping all of that tomorrow night, Black Monday, and the reaction there too.
Yeah, good. Hopefully you're celebrating good reactions to firing two absolute clowns and the clown show that they've managed. All right, so back to F1. And for that, we usually do the headline of the weekend, but now we are doing the headline of the year. Andy, you go ahead, go first.
Yeah, so my headline of the year is I really can't remember a season that invoked, I think, so many different emotions. There were parts that I laughed at, parts that I almost cried at, parts that made me wake up my neighbors with excitement. parts that made me want to throw my remote at my very expensive television, and parts that just left me confused and shaking my head and having keys on the keyboard and going, what the hell do I type? What just happened? They did what? This was a year of all timers. So 2021, I guess, here's to you.
Yeah, pretty much all of that I condensed down and just inject this season into my veins. I'm sure it'll be the most glorious drug. It was insane for all the reasons you said. Every type of emotion you could feel, we felt multiple times over the course of a very long season. And just give me more. All right, so now we'll talk qualifying, just an overall season recap. You got a couple things to talk about here, Andy, so go ahead.
Yeah, so normally this is the part of the show where I do my qualifying recap, but obviously with no sessions to talk about, we'll just talk about qualifying in general. So the most pole positions in 2021, that was Max Verstappen, and he led the way with 10. The most Q3 appearances, that was led by Mercedes, where both Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas made Q3 in all 22 races in 2021. Whether you like Bottas or not, that's still a heck of an achievement to do that. That's not easy to do. The most Q1 exits on the other side of the spectrum, well, Haas led the way. If they're leading in any category, this was the one that they were going to lead in. Nikita Mazepin in particular only got out of Q1 twice, and that was due to others taking engine penalties or not participating in the respective sessions. So on pure pace, Haas did not make it out of Q1 at all, except when somebody else wasn't running.
Yeah, that's not a good way to run a team. No.
No.
All right, so I've got some other notes on qualifying, but I think we'll get into that as we talk about the individual teams and drivers. So we're going to go in order of constructor finish here, 10th through first, and we're going to give a grade from each of us for the team's performance overall, and then a quick discussion, and then we'll go to each driver giving our grades as well. Looking through it, looks like we're pretty similar on a lot of them, a little bit difference on some, so we'll get into all that. But we're going to start, like I said, in the back, and that, of course, is Haas with a total of 0 points. Qualifying was just completely dominant, I'd say, by Mick Schumacher. He won the qualifying battle 20-2. The race battle, he finished ahead 16 of the 22 times. They did tie up points, though, with zero. Best race finish for Mick Schumacher was 12th, which technically gives him the lead in the standings. Highest grid position was 14th to start the race. And then DNFs, 3 for Mick, 5 for Mazepin. So overall, this was probably my easiest grade. Well, I guess that's not totally fair. I was trying to decide between an F and F minus. So, yeah, just a big solid F. In the widest tip red marker that your teacher had back in the day, and it's circled, and then there's probably a note at the bottom that you got to get it signed by your parents so that everybody knows how terrible you failed.
Oh, does that bring me back?
Andy, can you argue with any of that?
Really, no. They put out exactly what they put into this 2021 season, and if I could have the shot of oh, what's his name from the Facebook movie going, nothing. That's what they did. Nothing. They decided they weren't going to put any development into the 2021 car. And surprisingly, it was the slowest of the cars pretty much the entire year, surprising nobody. So they got what they put into it, which was not much as a team.
Yeah, I guess as a team, saving grace could be exactly what you said. They didn't put anything into the season, so they got exactly what they expected. And they do have a young potential superstar in Mick Schumacher, who showed some flashes. So we'll get into him next. But, yeah, I mean, if they come out next year and are competitive, then that this last year was worth it. If not, then it's not going to be good signs for Haas moving forward. But so Mick Schumacher finished the year in 19th in the driver's standing. My mistake there. I've got 2 points on the agenda, but he did have 0. So sorry about that. My grade for him, I was kind of wavering between the two, between the C+ and B-. But I think just the fact of, you know, rehashing how bad Haas was, I got to give the benefit of the doubt. I'll give him the B-. Like I said, he showed flashes. He dominated his teammate. That's really all you can ask for, considering it's his first year and a terrible machine. So where are you at on Schumacher?
Yeah, I'm at actually a little bit higher. I'm at a solid B for two things. One, From being a race winner and dominating F2 with Prima, I think the biggest thing when you go from F2 to F1 and you're in this type of situation is accepting the role that you're going to have to play. You know, when you're used to leading and you're used to setting the pace and you're used to being competitive or engaging with other drivers, it's really, really, really hard, I think, to have to accept that really the only guy you're going to beat is your teammate. And so, but he did that. And not only did he do that, but then he, you know, also sometimes we could see, you know, when there was rain or when there was opportunities for him to get his elbows out, he punched above his weight, I think, you know, when the car that was not developed at all on more than one occasion. So you see that there's racecraft there. I see the potential for Haas as a team. The other part, if you know, you're looking positively, don't forget, this is now we're finally going to see Simone Resta. The dude that they got from Ferrari last year is finally going to be deployed and actually get to do what they brought him to do in terms of car development for this year's car. So it could be better. This could be the ultimate blinder that nobody sees coming, but we will have to see how this plays out. But on Mick Schumacher, I'm a solid B.
Yeah, and I mean, he as we move into Mazepin here, it's like the qualifying battle was 20-2, and I can't remember for sure, but I don't think either one of those qualifyings that Mazepin won did. I feel like Schumacher didn't finish either of those.
Right, it may be ones where he's crashed or
so. It's
or
something like that. He really didn't beat him at all there. And then if you even look at the qualifying sectors over the season, Mick Schumacher won that battle 56-7. So almost the most dominant. There was actually a tie for first, which we'll get to as we get to those other teams. But I mean, he just wiped the floor with Mazepin. Made it real easy to give him another big fat F. I mean, positives. Let's see here.
he's still looking.
His dad brings a lot of money to the team, so that's his positive. Can you do better than that, Andy?
I have to agree with you that in terms of standard of an F1 driver, this was very, very lacking. So therefore, I did agree and gave him an F. To me, the actual race craft at the end of the day is kind of the defining trait for me here. There were, I think, too many times where Nikita specifically either did not know or did not care about the rules or the procedures. And yes, things sometimes are gentleman agreements or they weren't. But there were just too many times where he just decided, well, screw it. I'm just going to do what I want to do, regardless of what his team said, regardless of whether it was best for anybody other than maybe him. The only redeeming thing is I do hope that he's learned something over the course of this season, that he's learned how to be at least a somewhat of an F1 driver. Will improved pace obviously make him look better? Probably the answer to that would be yes. But he's got a long way to go if he wants to be like liked and respected, I think, amongst his peers and liked and respected in the paddock.
Long way to go is right. All right, so let's move into the ninth place team, that being Alfa Romeo with 13 points. As far as the teammate battle goes, we got Antonio Giovinazzi and Kimi Raikkonen tying in race finishes with 10 apiece. Qualifying, Giovinazzi edged out the retiring vet 13-7. However, Kimi did win in the points 10-3. Best race finish for Kimi being eighth place, Giovinazzi with 10th. Starting position for Kimi was 10th, and Giovinazzi best was 7th. Kimi had one DNF, and Giovinazzi had zero. So the first thing that kind of jumps out at me, besides the fact that Alfa Romeo is down in ninth place, is that they only had one DNF for the season. So I guess that's a positive to look forward to. But there's not really too much carrying over with this team. Brand new drivers coming in. So it definitely seemed like they had their eyes on next year as well. Especially with the early season success from Williams, Alpha kind of knew that ninth place was where they were going to be. So at that point, I'm sure they left a foot off the gas of 2021. So overall for the year, I'll give them a D. I don't know how to give them anything different than that. You know, it wasn't bad enough to be an F like Haas, but they didn't really seem to want to do anything better this year. So where are you at with Alfa Romeo?
Yeah, I'm a little better. I mean, I'm a D+ because, you know, sometimes on their day, they could at least maintain somewhat in the points. You know, they did actually score points. But I think just as a team overall, I don't think they chose to very much develop this car. They kind of also kind of took the strategy of 21 as a throwaway year. They just weren't as explicit about it as Haas were. Haas mm-hmm. just came out and said, look, we're just chucking this year. We don't really care. Alpha at least tried to play nice about it. They probably just didn't do a very good job with it.
Yeah. All right. So then for the individual drivers, we got Kimi Räikkönen first. He finished the year tied for 16th with 10 points. I'm right in the middle with him. C. You know, he lost the qualifying battle to his teammate, which is a little bit surprising, I guess, for how experienced and great Kimi is. But, I mean, it was nice to see him one last time. He just didn't do much for me. So I don't want to give him any less than a C because I don't want to, like, kick him on his way out the door. But at the same time, I can't justify anything higher than that.
Yeah, I'm being a little harsher just because this is F1 and it's kind of the world we're in, and I'm C-. I mean, I don't know what he brought other than maybe a lot of experience to the team this year. And my overreaching comment is this was a bit of a resounding thud of what has otherwise been a very storied and very, you know, markedly well-done career. Probably didn't need to be driving this year, but did. So, okay, great. And thanks for the memories, Kimi. And, you know, we will always remember Formula One with Kimi Räikkönen. But this year was a bit of a step back for the guy from Finland this year. So C- for me.
Very fair. And now we've got Antonio Giovinazzi finished tied for 18th with only 3 points. His last season, as we know it, in F1 as well, with him going over to Formula E. But kind of disappointed. You know, it seemed like in the second half of the year kind of started off and it seemed like there had been a fire lit under his butt a little bit. Like maybe he was trying one last gas to prove himself to remain in an F1. But it just kind of felt like way too little, way too late with him. So I'm giving him a solid D for the year. This was his last chance to prove his worth in F1. And I just don't think he did it.
Well, yeah, obviously he did not retain his seat and he will be driving in Formula E next year. I am a D+. You know, it's another guy that, like, on his day when he's right, he can score points. But I think ultimately 21 is going to prove to be a bit of a disappointment when he looks back on it. You know, probably could have done more, maybe should have done more. And he lost his seat, I think, ultimately because of it. It's not like they didn't give the guy chances. Ferrari still like him. He's going to go now to Formula E. I wish him nothing but the best. I think, you know, as a person, as a driver and a personality, he's fine. I have no objection to him,
yeah.
but just not there in the racecraft.
Yep. And then, to round out Alfa Romeo, just a quick shout out to Robert Kubica, who got a race in there this year. Mostly because that allows us to say that Nikita Mazepin finished 21st this year on a grid of 20 drivers. So
yes, he did.
If that doesn't sum up his season, I don't know what else will. So thank you, Bobby K. All right, let's move into the 8th place team, Williams. Andy, why don't you take this one and run us down through their results?
All right, so George Russell versus Nicholas Latifi. In terms of race positioning, Russell takes it 15 versus 5 for Nicholas Latifi. Qualifying was 20 in favor of Russell versus 2 for Latifi. In points, George Russell scored 16, where Latifi scored 7. Their best race finish. You do have to give George Russell a second place, even though it was worth half points for Spa. But it was because of the Herculean qualifying that he was able to do that. Nicholas Latifi's best finish turned out to be a P7. In terms of highest grid position, George Russell, again, the P2 qualifying effort in Spa, great lap in the wet, nothing but respect on that. Nicholas Latifi's highest grid position was in 10th. He did make Q3 once. And in terms of DNFs, George Russell did have the edge, or lack thereof, 3 DNFs versus 2 for Latifi. In terms of my overall grade for Williams, I'm giving them a solid B+. I believe that there were many times where they punched over their weight, but I think the track really dictated, you know, kind of where they were. I'm sorry. That's the wrong note. This was by far more points unexpected. On their day, they could be in the midfield, but they need to work on consistency and put the investment dollars that they have now at their disposal to work. So can they capitalize? I think that's the question for Williams.
Yeah, I was comfortable with giving them an A-. I thought Williams really kind of surprised me this year, especially in the first half of the season. I mean, there was a double points finish which I would have found very hard to believe had you told me that was going to happen at the beginning of the season. So definitely moving in the right direction. And like you mentioned, they've got that money now coming in. They just got to put it to use the right way. They have to be one of those like lower tier scrappy teams here for a little while and make the most out of every penny they get. Hopefully with the cost cap being in there, it can help them catch up to the rest of the pack a little quicker. So some good things happening at Williams. And then for that qualifying, like you mentioned, so George dominated 20-2, but when you look at just the qualifying sectors, he beat Latifi pretty soundly at 56-10 in individual sectors. So he's up there in the top probably 3 to 5 of finishers as far as dominating teammates there. So
and George doing a great job of getting a Williams into Q3 more times than definitely was expected. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, in the race in Great Britain, you know, the first sprint, you know, he put that car in Q3. That was an electric moment. The lap again from Spa just keeps sticking out in my head. You just did not see that coming.
Yeah, you like to call him Mr. Saturday, and that's what he is right now. So I can't wait to see him doing his Saturday things against one of the best in the world next year. So that should be exciting. Yep. But as far as grades go for individual drivers, we can start with Latifi finishing 17th place with 7 points. I gave him a solid C. Did better than I expected. I mean, beginning of the year, if you would have asked me what I thought he'd be at the end of the year, I probably would give you like a D or D minus. But to get those points, I'm definitely giving him a bump for that. And I almost gave him a C minus, but I gave him a little bit of extra credit for crashing at the right time in the finale, giving us just the craziest finish ever. So I'll throw him a bone there, give him a solid C. What do you got?
I'm more in the C minus category, and obviously he's going to be remembered for how the season ended more than anything else. Yeah. But in terms of like the actual race craft and the rest of his season and his body of work, I would say he was horrifically meh in 2021. You know, he was there. He's the guy who's there.
Yeah.
And so many times we go right past him. You know, how many times did we actually, other than Abu Dhabi, really talk about Nicholas Latifi? Probably not very often. And I think that's probably what holds him back.
Yeah, I think he's in for an interesting battle next year with Albon. Because I think he might have, the first step on him with Albon being out for a year and being comfortable with the teams and things. But that should be an interesting lower back of the field battle to keep an eye on for both those guys who knows what their careers will look like past that. So it could be a big moment.
It should definitely be two drivers who are going to be super motivated to want to show well to keep their seats.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be exciting. All right. So for George Russell, finished the year in 15th with a whopping 16 points. And that really is a whopping for a Williams driver of late. For me, I'm giving him a very solid B+, real close to that A range for me with him, but I feel like he kind of disappeared towards the end of the year. I feel like a lot of the good times stopped rolling there, especially later in the second half of the year. But, I mean, nothing to be ashamed of there. B+ did exactly what he could have wanted. He proved himself week in, week out until he got that contract and to go to the big squad now in Mercedes. So, I mean, overall, very productive, very successful year for George. Where are you at with him?
Yeah, I'm a solid B. I just look here. Again, probably gets more out of that Williams car than he deserves. Some awesome qualifying sessions, as we talked about. Like I said before, Spa being by far the most notable of those. I did go a little bit lower on the grade than you did because I thought he did really disappear near the end of the season. You know, right up until, like, if you would have stopped the season when he got that Mercedes contract, he's an A-. You know, because he had been putting forth that kind of effort. But once he was a made guy, you know, you didn't really see him, you know, pushing is almost as hard. And I wonder if that's going to be something that gets flushed out in the spotlight that Mercedes is going to come with it. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
I'm still very high on George.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. All right, so let's move up to the 7th place team now, Aston Martin, with a total of 77 points. When you look at the Lance Stroll versus Sebastian Vettel battle, race finishes, you got 11 for Stroll over, or finishing ahead 11 times over 10 for Vettel. Qualifying, Vettel won that battle 14-8. He also won the points 43-34, however, trailed very far behind Charles Leclerc, and that's all that mattered. Vettel's best race finish was 2nd place in quite the epic race that was. Stroll actually finished in 6th, which I had forgotten about until I just read it right now. Highest grid position to start in, Vettel had a 5th, and Stroll had a 7th. DNFs. 5 total for Sebastian Vettel. So a pretty big number there, and 3 for Lance Stroll. So overall, what do you give Aston Martin on the year?
I'm at a C minus for them. I thought coming into the season, there was a lot expected. You know, they were competing for P3 in the constructors last year, their last year's Racing Point. A lot expected with Aston Martin and all of the gravitas and the new colors and the paint scheme and new sponsors and Lawrence Stroll being Lawrence Stroll. And it just didn't deliver. They never could really overcome the testing woes. Bad concept on the car, really, from jump. And the cost cap meant that they really couldn't develop themselves out of it. So, yeah, for me, unfortunately, promise not recognized here. C minus.
Yeah, I'm actually a little harsher, which really shouldn't be much of a surprise if you listen to the podcast throughout the season. But I'm giving them a D. I really expected Aston Martin to make some noise this year. But it turns out when you can't just completely copycat a successful car from the year before, then you have some struggles. So, yeah, they definitely had a different concept on their car this year. Just didn't work out. I guess I can't blame them for taking a shot there for the final season of these regs to try something crazy. But just did not work out. So very comfortable with the D there. And I mean, that's really all I can say about Aston Martin. So to get in to one of my favorite punching bags, Sebastian Vettel finished the year in 12th place with 43 points. I know some people, mainly John, our co-host here, had high hopes for Vettel. And he's got quite the army of fans as well that probably expected a lot more out of him. I'm giving him a D right along with the team grade. I just, you know, I guess you'd maybe give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure some people will with changing teams. But I guess I would have expected more out of a veteran of his stature and pedigree to kind of get with it a little bit quicker. But maybe it was just the car that was holding him back. But I don't know. I've been saying he's washed for some time now. So nothing happened this year to change my mind on that. What do you got on Vettel?
I'm a little higher. I'm actually C plus, because I do think that there still is some skill left in the old dog for a little bit. But I will say battling for 10th does not feel like a good place, for a 4-time world champion. So, you know, based on the CV and based on what the results were, it's definitely lacking. I think he'd be the first guy to admit it. You know, I attribute some of it to the car. Absolutely. But I do also, I think, there were opportunities that he probably had throughout the season that he didn't make as good on as he would have liked to. So probably a team that as a whole needs to really look in the mirror and decide what it wants to be, because all of the ingredients seem to be here.
Yeah.
To do some really good stuff, but it just hasn't been seen yet.
Yep. So now for Lance Stroll, finished the year in 13th, right behind Vettel. He had 34 points. The qualifying sector battle, you already mentioned Vettel won, or I guess I mentioned 14-8 in the qualifying, but when you break down by the sector, Vettel won that 39-24. Doesn't come as much a surprise to me. We all know Lance Stroll isn't the best of qualifiers. I do miss the days when we used to have a contest every week of whether Stroll would even make it out of Q1. So he does that more often now, but overall, he's pretty terrible at qualifying. For me, I'm giving him the same grade as Vettel and the same grade as the team, just a D. You know, he had some moments, I guess, brief ones, but he disappeared a lot this year, I thought, which I don't really mind that happening because I'm just not a big Lance Stroll guy. So, yeah, D for me. Where you got him?
Again, I'm being probably a little more lenient because I think the car is a big part of it. But that is also part of my critique of him. So I'm C plus in terms of a grade. But again, I think the bug with Lance, as we've always said, at least since I've been on the show, is he drives to the limit of the car. If the car is good, Lance Stroll can be very good. If the car is bad, Lance Stroll will be bad. Yeah. It's just really that's it. You don't see anything beyond what the car is capable of doing, where with the great ones, you know, we're talking about Mick Schumacher and why we're giving him a B. Why did I give him a B? Because I think he's going beyond where the car is. George Russell, I think I'm giving him a B because I think he's going beyond where the car is. And that's the ones that you think are really great, or the ones you think have the potential to be really great, have the ability to do that. I've yet to see it from Lance Stroll. So C plus, it's okay. It's meh from me. C plus.
So moving now to our 6th place team, that being AlphaTauri, with a total of 142 points for the battle between Pierre Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda. pretty far out of hand in Pierre Gasly's favor. He won the race finishes battle 16-5, the qualifying battle 21-1. The only driver to win 21 out of the 22 qualifying sessions versus teammate. 110 points for Pierre Gasly versus 32 for Yuki. Best race finish, closer though. Pierre Gasly with a third, Yuki with a fourth. Highest grid starting position, second for Pierre Gasly, seventh for Yuki Tsunoda. DNFs, three total, two for Pierre, one for Yuki. I thought AlphaTauri had an excellent season. They looked really, really good. And by they, I mean Pierre Gasly. he really did carry this team. But overall, I was just super, super impressed with the squad week in, week out. And for that, I'm giving them a B-plus for their team grade. Where do you have the Red Bull junior team?
Sister team. They would not call themselves the junior team anymore. I have them at a solid B because I do think Pierre Gasly kept that team in it as long as he possibly could. Very strong start to the season. A very good finish to the season, I think, overall for the team. The one thing that's just weird, and this could be when we talk about, are they a little brother team or are they a sister team? We don't really know, because the qualifying pace and the practice pace, they show up and they look really fast, and you're like, oh, this is going to be a good weekend for AlphaTauri. And then Sunday comes along, and something weird happens, and they fall off. So that's probably the one thing that I think they have to work on in terms of a team, consistency in their pace throughout the course of the weekend. Because if they can put it together on Sundays, you got something, because they've got some really good bases for Saturday pace.
Yeah, I think you'll see that as we get into the individual grades for these drivers as well, that there's clearly one thing that AlphaTauri needs to get better with if they want to move up the constructors table. So the qualifying sectors battle, we had Pierre Gasly winning 57-6, which is tied for the most dominant. But 57-6 in all of qualifying, only six sectors was Yuki faster. So pretty crazy there. And that kind of just leads into the fact that I'm giving Pierre Gasly, who finished tied for ninth with 110 points, a solid A on this season. Pierre Gasly was a revelation this year. Ever since getting sent down from Red Bull, like, a lot of people could have just kind of put their head down and felt bad for themselves. But Pierre Gasly just... I mean, he's just a man on a mission wanting to prove everybody wrong and prove that he deserves to be in F1. And I think he's done that and then some this season. So very confidently giving him an A here. Are you with me on that, Andy?
I am still in the A range. I'm a little A-, but I really do agree that he was probably one of the more standouts of the midfield this season by far. Several occasions where I would say he definitely outdrove the car, drug the team up in the standings. Give that guy a team that actually works around him and see what can happen. The only thing that I think will hold him back is he's still in that Red Bull Academy, Red Bull culture. And for whatever reason, the upper tiers of Red Bull don't like him. And I don't understand why. I think it's one of these, it's got to be a personality thing, and he has the potential and the ability, I think, to be great, but it's not going to be with that team. So I think he will continue to be very good. He will be solid. He will continue to shine at AlphaTauri, but I don't see him winning anything significant until he's out of Red Bull.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what the future holds for him, but you definitely got to think that Alpine would be a place for him to go. And kind of go back home and be the French hero. Like you said, if he's a legit team with a legit, machine behind him and underneath him for that matter, he could be really, really good. And he's shown that he can be awesome throughout an entire season as well. So Yuki Tsunoda, on the other hand, finishing 14th, 32 points. So for a rookie season with a guy as little experience he's got, I guess you got to say that that's not too bad. But for me, I'm at a C- on him. Definitely showed some speed, some flashes throughout the year, but he's got a lot to work on, and not just driving. He's got a lot to work on outside the track and a big part of the mental game. So you mentioned the Better Health advertiser now. I'm not saying he needs to call Better Health, but he's got to get the mental part of his game up to par if he wants to be in F1 long term. And so for that, I'm sticking with that C minus for him. I definitely, you know, especially early in the year, it started, seemed like he kind of started out fast. It's like, oh my God, this kid might be something, might be a thing. And then it's like, I don't know, maybe it was just too much, too fast. It kind of got away from him there. So where do you stand on Yuki?
I'm at a solid C. My comment was a good start, good finish, but boy, in the middle was there some absolute misery.
Yeah.
Where it just like he just disappeared. You know, out in Q1, not even close. Like, I mean, he was finishing just ahead of the Haases at a couple of tracks this year. So I think a lot of learning went on. I know he's had a lot of coaching. I know Alex Albon worked with him extensively. And there was also driver coaches and stuff brought in. You know, you mentioned the mental game. I think it was, this is something that everyone has seen. The teams have taken, you know, steps to address it. It's up to Yuki now to make the next step. You know, he can be the face of Japan, which is a country that is just, they, you want to talk about a fandom. We haven't been there in a couple of years because of COVID, but a fandom that it just loves its F1 is Japan. Mm-hmm. So he can be the face of that country if he can step up to it. But it's on him to do that.
Yeah, definitely good points about Yuki. So definitely a bright future. I can't wait to see what AlphaTauri can do going into next season. But now we'll move up to fifth place with Alpine, 155 points. You had the Fernando Alonso versus Esteban Ocon battle. Fernando up 11-10 in race finishes. Qualifying split down the middle, 11-11 points. We got Fernando with 81, Ocon with 74. Best race finish. Ocon gets the edge there with his race win, which was an absolutely crazy race. And then Fernando finished in third. Best race start, Fernando with third and Ocon with fifth. DNF 5 for the team, 2 for Fernando, and 3 for Ocon. So why don't you kick us off with your team grade for Alpine?
Yeah, so for Alpine, I'm at a B plus. I think latter part of the season actually pushed them a little bit higher than I normally would have had them. I think this was a team that the track really dictated how they did. If it was favorable to them, they could do really well. If it was unfavorable to them, they would also. This was also a team that at times could very much disappear and be out in Q1. So you really didn't know what you were going to expect until they turned up basically on Saturday, because you really don't learn anything from Friday practices, at least not with this set of cars, with this expiring set of regulations. So because of that, you know, you could be all over the place. So, but I think overall, given the fact that they did not do any sort of engine development, given the fact that the chassis, obviously it just looked weird with the Renault engine in the back of it. I thought the team did a really good job to get the most out of what they could with what they had.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm giving them a B minus for the season for a lot of the reasons you already said. I mean, they had some really, really high highs, the highest of highs, really, with that race win. They also had some really low lows, but I think the highs outweighed the lows overall for them when you look at the season as a whole. Definitely moving in the right direction. I would credit some of that to finally cutting ties with Cyril Abitbol. Never a huge fan of his, but I think they're moving in the right direction. Of course, they've got the oldest driver on the track now with Alonso still being there. But that could be a good thing for Ocon. Ocon finally showed some glimpses of what we've been hearing about for a long time from him, and the talent that he has. I'm pretty comfortable with that B minus. Coming into the year, I definitely expected them to be a contender in the mid pack. At times they were up there with Ferrari and McLaren, but not as often as I would have thought coming into the year. So that kind of kept me from giving them anything higher than that B minus. But let's go ahead and get into Fernando Alonso, who finished the year in 10th place with 81 points. What do you got for Orlando? How about Fernando?
For Fernando,
yeah.
I'm giving him a solid B. We really did not know really what to expect with him coming into the season. And it is clear that the racecraft is still there. The defending is still there. You know, give that. I used to say when he was with McLaren, give that guy a sniff at a result and watch him come alive. He was a lot more alive than I've seen him in a number of years in Formula One. You know, look at the race in Qatar where he finished third. He was pumped.
Yeah.
And he was excited. He was happy to do the defending in Hungary. to have Esteban do it. And, you know, he's on the radio saying, tell Esteban, defend like a lion here, you know, as I'm trying to get a podium here. But, yeah, give him a sniff of the result. That dude's still alive. He's still got the fire. And I still think he's got enough, he's still got the talent in him to have a really good year next year if the car is there. That's the L plan that we all keep hearing about. So does it come to fruition? We will find out in 22 with Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, I'm right there with you with a straight B for Fernando. You know, I wasn't sure what the season was going to look like for him, but definitely showed me a lot that he really wants to still be in F1 and can get really excited to be in F1 while he's racing. So, yeah, if they can come out correct with a good car next year, then I think the sky's the limit for him to maybe make one last push towards doing something great and being on top of the game again. So, yeah, I'm comfortable with the B for him. So for Esteban Ocon, we're a little bit different here. It looks like he's in 11th place, 74 points. I've got a B minus on him. I know he got the race win, and that kind of was a shock win. Not that it wasn't well-deserved, because it was. Shout out, like you said, to Alonso for the defending he did on Lewis Hamilton in that race in Hungary. But he definitely deserved the race win and got it. I just there's just still something about Ocon where, you know, when I first started getting into the sport, he just wasn't a – I wasn't a fan of his for whatever reason. And then I kept hearing more and more about this, like, great talent he was, and he was going to be the next big thing. And some guys really, really liked him. I just, the instances of me seeing that's just few and far between. So it's like, it kind of was a struggle for me to give him any kind of B, let alone, you know, a B or a B plus. So I stuck with the B minus, mostly because he did get that race win. So I give him the benefit of the doubt there. But going into next season, he's still, in my eyes anyway, like, I, you know, he doesn't care, but he still has something to prove to me, because I just don't fully see it yet. So where are you at with Ocon?
I thought this season was very much a bounce back year for him. So I'm at a B plus. I was very impressed with the race win in Hungary. But I was even more impressed, actually, with the showing in Saudi Arabia, because he was then suddenly thrust into that spotlight. And until the last millimeter of the last lap, dude was going to get a podium out of that race until Bottas pips him on the line there. So that tells me that the potential, you know, you just referenced that, you know, a lot of people have said that this was you know, Toto Wolff, very highly rated driver in the Mercedes Academy. So this tells me that potential is still there. And he's been through a lot, actually, as an F1 driver. You know, being out of the sport, then coming back into the sport. It's a lot, actually. It's a big ask. And for someone that I think a lot of people have written off, and it's okay if you have, this I still think was a good bounce-back season. If the car continues to be good, can now, when he's more in that spotlight more and more, can he be a consistent player in that? You know, that's something we don't know yet. But there is potential there, and maybe I'm being more fond because I think Toto Wolff is a good judge of talent. So I'm going to give him a B plus on the season because I thought it was good.
And then before moving on, I did mention that their qualifying record was split evenly 11 and 11. But if you look at their qualifying sectors, Esteban Ocon edged him out 34 to 32. So just, I mean, you could not be more
even as you can get.
It's pretty crazy when you think about it over the course of the season, how even they were in qualifying. I guess that is a good testament to Ocon and his talent to say you could do that in equal machinery with Fernando Alonso. So
and Fernando doesn't make it easy on you, regardless of how, you know, bubbly he is in the paddock or something like that. When it comes time for, you know, to put it down, he's going to put it down and get the most out of the car. So
yeah, most definitely.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good, a lot better pairing than I maybe thought it was going to be going into the year, but now it's like, man, they could be really one to do some things next season if Alpine can get the car right with the new regs. So
yeah, and if you believe the falling of the tea leaves, at least from Twitter, they may have something in the wings next year. We'll have to see.
We will.
But there's a lot of that going on.
Yes, the year. Yes, there is. It's a beautiful time of year where everybody has a chance and everybody has high hopes. Except
it's like spring training as a Cub fan. You know, every year, hope springs eternal.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
except this year where we might not have baseball.
Oh, don't say that, Andy.
Yeah.
Positive vibes only. All right, yeah. So let's go ahead and take our break, listen to a sponsor, pay some bills around here, and we'll be right back to talk about the top four teams.
A Attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston, do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like they're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, 20% off, free shipping. Let's get back to it.
Hi, welcome back to Season 3, Episode 59 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast, where me and Andy, your hosts, are giving out our season end grades and team and driver reviews. Quick reminder, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, YouTube, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. Please send us your ask us anything questions for next week's episode. And you can check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. All right, so we're moving on to the top four. And that brings us to McLaren, who did finish in fourth place with 275 points. Andy, it's your team. You take it away.
All right. So as grade-wise, I'm going to give them an A-. This may be a little homer here, but I'm so what? I think they started fast. They were hamstrung by the fact that they did not have any sort of development tokens available to them because of the engine change. But that was, as I've said many times, is something of their own doing, and it's something that they had to deal with it. It was an awesome middle part to the season. If you actually lined up Spa, Monza, Russia, and even go back a couple races to Austria, the two races there, they showed really, really well. So a really awesome middle part of the season where they were in the mix almost every weekend. Could have and should have been two wins. One was denied by the rain, of course, in Russia. And then after that, I thought either it was other teams continued to develop and they couldn't, or they ran out of luck, or just had some bad races. I thought they faded late. But overall, I still think a very, very successful season, even though they didn't get third again in the constructors this year. So I am A- on the boys from Woking.
Yeah, I'm not too far off you. I got them at the B+. If we would have stopped the season, you know, with like, what, 6-7 races to go, I probably would have been a solid A, maybe even an A+. But then they tailed off there at the end, let Ferrari take them over in the Constructors' Championship. But, I mean, super impressed with everything they did this year. They were a force, like you mentioned, for a handful of races in a row there. It's like they were competing for not just podiums or top fives, but literally for wins. And they ended up getting one. And as you mentioned, they really should have had two, just without those heartbreaking scenes at the end of the Russian Grand Prix. But, I mean, overall, if you look at statistically, yeah, Lando Norris beating Daniel Ricciardo 15-7 and finishing in races. Qualifying battle 15-7 as well. 160 points for Lando to 115 for Danny Ricciardo. Best finish for Danny was first place. Lando Norris got a second place. Lando did start a race in first, though, and Daniel Ricciardo started a race in second. Each had one DNF. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at their qualifying sectors, Lando kind of wiped the floor with them there as well. I think it was 50-16. Lando had the advantage there. So I guess we can move into Danny Ricciardo. End of the year in eighth place, 115 points. I had a lot of trouble with his grade. I actually gave him a C+, which I feel like might be too harsh. You might be able to talk me out of that. but I think he was slow to get into the swing of things at McLaren. Once he did, he showed some flashes, and then kind of as a team, they tailed off, like we mentioned already. But he did get a race win. So it's like, to me, it's kind of surprising I'm giving a C+, but also he's a dude who he's been a race winner before. So it's not like it's an Ocon or something who got his first race win. I'm going to give him a big boost because of that. You know, I expect him to be that kind of driver. So, I'm at a C+. What are you at, Andy? Can you convince me to go higher?
I'm a little higher, but not actually all that much more. I'm at a B-. And I'm even putting the race win at Monza, I think, really saved his grade. Mm. Because I think without it, I think I'm in the same boat with you. I think I'm at C+. Struggled really to adapt to the new chassis, the new power units. Too many poor qualifying efforts that result in way too much work to do on Sunday. He's still got, obviously, some very impressive racecraft, and he continues to do really well, I think, at overtaking. And he does also like to keep one Valtteri Bottas behind him for good chunks of races. So you got to love him, if nothing else, for that. But I think the best thing for him was to see this car, this particular car and model, the MCL 35M, go away. I think he can reset, restart next year, come in fresh, be on the same level with his teammate in terms of the car development. He's obviously had now some voice in the team. So hopefully he can be a little more tailored to what he likes, and hopefully better results are going to come from him because they are expected, given what they're paying him and given the gravitas that they felt he was deserving by bringing him over.
All right. Then you have not convinced me. I'm going to stick with the C+. All right, you go ahead. You can have Lando Norris. That's your boy, Andy. Take it away.
So I'm going to give him a solid A. This was a guy that we said coming into this season needed to make a step, and I think he's done so. He scored his first ever pole position, a career second best. Would have really loved to have seen what the qualifying effort in Spa for him could have been if he hadn't had the wreck, because that was a lap that had me sitting up in my chair going, oh, my God, this is all purple. It's all purple. He's going to do it. And then you just saw, unfortunately, that we never saw the end of the lap. But a guy who, I think he's taking the next step. The racecraft is there. The whole package, it seems to be there. The only thing that holds him back is his own confidence in his own abilities. If he can get that part of it licked and not be so hard on himself when things don't necessarily go his way, he's got all the tools. It's all there. It just, can we put it all together? Because it's like 90% there.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to you. I got him as an A-. I think he's an awesome talent. He's definitely gotten the balls, basically, for lack of a better term, that me and John had asked for early in his career. You know, he looks like a much more confident driver. But as you said, there is some confidence there to be had for him as well. So I think once he unlocks that, he's going to be a truly special driver. Pretty much the only thing preventing me from giving him a pure A is, you know, falling off at the end, not finishing in fifth. But he did spend a good chunk of the season in like third and fourth in the driver standings. But at the end of the day, all the teenage girls on Twitter convinced me to give him the A-, since he's got a girlfriend now and is off the market. So shame on you, Lando. All right, so let's move on to...
This is why I don't go on Instagram, by the way.
I caught a little bit of that. I don't know. That's why, like, if I'm on the Twitter feed, I'm more likely on my personal one than the show one, because the show one's feed is a lot different than my feed.
But we do love every one of our show followers. Yes. We love you. We cherish you. We appreciate you. But, yeah, I pretty much stay on my own feed.
Yes, we love you all. All right, so Ferrari finished in third place, maybe happy, but disappointed that makes me happy for Ferrari, with 323.5 points to finish comfortably ahead of McLaren. Charles Leclerc versus Carlos Sainz. Charles got the race wins 14-8, the qualifying win 13-9. Did finish behind him in points, though, 164.5 for Carlos, 159 for Charles Leclerc. Best race finish, second for both of them. Best starting position for Charles Leclerc was first, second for Carlos Sainz. Of course, Carlos, zero DNFs on the year. Probably Mr. Consistent all year long. Charles Leclerc with two DNFs, which ultimately is what cost him the points lead on the team and fifth place in the drivers' standings there. So overall, I honestly, if I was truthful with myself, I could not have asked for a better finish position for Ferrari at the beginning of the year. I was worried about McLaren at the beginning of the year. I was worried a little bit about Aston Martin, actually. I think John convinced me of that somehow, and even of Alpine a little bit. But I'm giving Ferrari an A because they finished in third. They developed throughout the year, and they just looked like a team that actually knew what it was doing most of the time, which was a nice change, even with Mattia Binotto still involved. So that was a bit of a shocker to me. Not saying I'm on the Mattia bandwagon or anything, but not as much to be mad at them for for this season as compared to the rest. So the team is definitely moving in the right direction. Finally, the second driver in Carlos Sainz, which I don't even know if you can call him a second driver at this point, but he came in and was just from the jump, just Mr. Consistency. I think he finished the most laps of any driver, no DNFs. You know, his average finish position was higher than Charles, and it was just a great season. Coming into a new team, a team under a ton of scrutiny. You know, it's like few teams, if any, are under the microscope like Ferrari is, especially in Italy. But Carlos, you know, moved close to the factory, spent as much time as he could with the team to get to, you know, ingratiated into the team. And I think he did an awesome job with that. I'm hoping, and I'm not saying Charles Leclerc didn't do a great job with his season and things he did, but I'm hoping that Carlos Sainz being there is going to be pushing Charles Leclerc in the best way possible, because I think they're going to be good teammates. I think they're going to be successful teammates, and a bright future with each of them. So I'm excited to see what's to come with them. Where do you stand on their team grade before we get into the drivers?
As a team, I agree with you. I think they are deserving of an A compared to where they were last year, to the bounce back this season. Obviously, they developed a power unit, which is now legal fully. There's no ifs, ands, or buts questions about that, at least right now. So that helped a bit. You know, it only matters a tenth maybe or two, but that's how close the midfield has been this season.
Yeah.
It's only a tenth or two in it between all of them. And the other thing that I thought, just as a team, that I noticed, much better execution throughout the race weekends. Other than the Monaco thing where they didn't exactly decide to look at Charles Leclerc's car, which happened. But after that, you really didn't notice them. I mean, you didn't notice really slow pit stops. You didn't notice anything else. So I would just say, you know, from Friday to Sunday, very well executed. And I do also think personnel-wise, the more I see of Laurent Mendes at Ferrari, the more I like him. If that's eventually your team principal in waiting, good things are going to come for that team, because that dude, I think, has got all the stuff to be a good team leader.
Agreed there. So to get into the individual drivers, we'll start off with Charles Leclerc, finishing seventh place with 159 points. You know, for me, it kind of came down to Monaco when it came to his grade. You know, yeah, I blame the team for not checking that. But, you know, there's a reason it broke. And Charles got to take some of the blame for that. If it not for that incident, you know, we could have seen a Charles Leclerc win, which I guess there's a lot that goes into that. But, you know, there's a couple times this year where Charles Leclerc could have gotten the win, didn't. If he would have gotten a single win, I think he would have easily been in the A range for me. But I'm sticking with a B-plus for him because at the end of the day, he finished with less points than his teammate, which he should not ever be okay with in his F1 career. He's got the talent to always be the number one on whatever team he's on, is what I believe. So, yeah, B-plus for him. So not a bad season by any means, but definitely there was some left of the tank, I feel like, for him. And like I mentioned before, I'm really hoping Carlos Sainz is what helps push him and unlock all of his talent. So where do you got for Charles Ranquet?
I agree with you. I'm at a B+. I actually thought this was, of all the drivers on the grid, I thought Charles was one of the toughest ones for me to actually try to seal in on a rating.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I was a little bit A-, because I'm thinking, okay, he did get pole in Monaco. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
Good for you for doing that. He also got pole in Azerbaijan, yeah, which is something that I actually completely forgot about until I went back and looked at it again. So I'm like, oh yeah, he's got a couple of poles on him. So, I mean, those are hard things to do. Strong second half by the team. It does kind of surprise me that he was a bit overshadowed by Carlos Sainz at the end, obviously missing out in terms of the point total. Does he have to potentially fight for the role of team leader next year? We don't necessarily know. Is that something that, you know, what's the dynamic? You know, to this point, they've all been collaborating because they've all been trying to get back to where they wanted to be.
Yeah.
Well, now they have the base and they're going to be there. Now what happens and how does that get managed and who's going to be the one that manages that? So a lot of questions. They're good questions to have. It means your team is good again. But it's also what does that mean as we go through a new regs and new dynamic in 2022? And if he does have to fight, is he up for that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love Carlos Sainz and I think he's insanely consistent, and I think he could be one of the best 1B drivers on the grid. I just don't know if he's got that extra something that's going to put him over the edge. I mean, Charles Leclerc was pretty much better throughout the season in qualifying. 13-9 overall, sector times 43-23 when you break it down by sector to sector. So I think he's quicker. But Carlos isn't just going to disappear. He's always going to be there. Now, whether that's being there for his teammate, helping him out, because Charles Leclerc is pushing for wins or not. But, it wouldn't kill me if Carlos Sainz was the main guy. I just don't know if he's, like, the superhero type, super driver. He's just always going to be really, really good, I think. So that'll be interesting to watch. And maybe I'm wrong about that. And I wouldn't mind being wrong about that. And Carlos Sainz winning, like, 4 driver's championships for Ferrari. I wouldn't hate that at all. I would love it, in fact. But, yeah, just something tells me Leclerc seems like the guy and Carlos Sainz seems like the guy's guy. If that makes sense. So for Carlos Sainz, though, I say all that to say this season, I'm giving him an A+. I couldn't have asked for more out of him coming to this year. I mean, it seemed like he got used to the car the fastest of any of the guys switching teams. He really didn't put a foot wrong, and he was just always there and got stronger and stronger as the season went on. So A+ for him, and I'm interested to hear what you got for him.
I am at a solid A, and hang on just one second. I just want to make sure I'm getting the right notes for him. Can someone please notice the development in this guy over the past couple of seasons? You know, it just seems that TV just, everyone says he's consistent. It's actually been really, really consistently in going in the right direction.
Yeah.
In terms of his average finishes. This is also the guy who could also put a really, really interesting monkey wrench in the grand Ferrari plan by being too damn good. Because, you know, we all kind of know, or we all think we know, that the long-term solution for Ferrari is a Leclerc-Schumacher grid. Our co-host John would like to think that it's going to be a Sainz-Schumacher grid. We had some interesting debates about that, and we will see how that ultimately plays out. But Carlos, like you said, he's not going anywhere. And he's doing nothing other than being consistently the guy who he is. And it's been consistent development. Has it been like super great, like from back of the grid to the front of the grid development? No, but it's been incremental. It's been noticeable. It's been consistent. He is Mr. Consistency. It's what won them P3 in the constructors this year with Ferrari. It was his consistency that I greatly attribute for him winning P3 for McLaren last year. So, you know, what do you do with that? You know, it's just, is he good enough, like you said, to only be a 1B driver? Does he have that extra gear? Have we just not seen it? I don't know. But it's going to be there are very interesting times ahead, I think, at Scuderia Ferrari in the next year or two, for sure.
Yeah, I'm like super pumped about it. I just hope that they can continue to coexist and push each other instead of like it turning ugly, because that could obviously tank the whole thing really quick. But it feels good. It seems like they're both good teammates. And Carlos Sainz, I mean, it's just like he's at McLaren, helps them get back to, you know, kind of on the sharp end of the grid, goes to Ferrari, helping them get back to the sharp end of the grid. I mean, it's just like he's just a good dude to have on your team, apparently. So he should be well paid.
And did the same thing with Toro Rosso when he was there, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. So he's just somehow still a little bit under the radar type. That's just an incredible, incredible talent. So will be fun to watch. For people like me as Ferrari fans, and I'm sure for outside observers too. Just hopefully not too fun for John, because that'll probably mean that things are going terrible and they hate each other and all those things. But all right, let's move into the second place team, that being Red Bull with 585.5 points. We want to run through their battle stats here.
Yeah, and this is going to look very, very favorable to the eventual 2021 Drivers World Champion, that being Max Verstappen. In race, Max leads in this category, 19 versus 3 for Checo. Qualifying, not even very close, 20 for Max versus 2 for Checo. Points, obviously, 395.5 for Max, 190 for Checo. They did tie in terms of best race finish. They each did win a race this year. Max won considerably more of them. highest grade position, Sergio's best qualifying was second. Max is obviously was winning the race. Like I said, he did many of them. They both tied for DNFs, each with 3.
Very good. And then what do you got for their grade?
So for my grade, I'm actually giving them as a constructor an A minus, and that's simply because they chose really to not value the constructors championship when they could have in favor of the drivers championship. And I think that was totally played out in the last couple races of the year where Checo was the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah. And that's actually a fair point. I had him at an A, but I'm really probably leaning more towards A minus because it's tough to argue with that. Like, I think if they cared more about the constructors, they probably could have won the constructors, but probably not won the drivers' championship.
Right.
And, you know, Christian Horner is in absolute love with Max Verstappen, so it doesn't surprise me for a second that that's the decision they made. It's like his own son almost. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And really, you know, you got to have that one marketable guy to push the brand, and that is Max Verstappen to them. So it makes sense that they wanted to get him his first drivers' championship, which they did. And so that I'm going to stick with the A because they did have the world championship driver on their roster there. When you look at their sector breakdown, just a little bit more of that dominance we mentioned, 57-6, Max beat Sergio. So the same there as Pierre Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda. So just absolute dominance by Max all year long, really. But when he really, really needed Sergio, he was there for him at the end. So hell of a team. I expect maybe even more out of them next year. All right, so for individual grades, what do you got for Max Verstappen?
I don't know how you don't give the driver's champion an A+. so I have done so. And for all the guff and everything that has been said, even on this show or others or wherever else, about the last race, Max Verstappen is at least in two things, in my opinion. He's a worthy champion, and he's a deserving champion. Regardless of the final race of the season and how all that played out, just an unyielding style of racecraft where I'm going to throw it down and I'm going to dare you to come and beat me. And that ultimately won the day at the end of the day, regardless of however you feel about it. That's what won him this championship, was that style of driving, whether you think it's good or bad. That's what won him the championship, was being who he was consistently throughout this entire season. So kudos to Max on making that work, if nothing else. So A plus for me. Him and Lewis, as we'll get to, were just in another quadrant.
Yeah. Right with you. Excellent points. A plus for Max. He is the champion of 2021. And for all the reasons you said, I mean, he had just that fearlessness. And really push the pace and look for every advantage he could find. So that's the kind of driver he is, and that's the kind of driver I like. And, yeah, it won him the championship. So A-plus for Max. All right, so for Checo, Sergio Checo Perez finished the year in fourth with 190 points. So for him, I mean, finishing in fourth is expected. If you're on, you know, either Mercedes or Red Bull, you better not be lower than that. And he was for a rather large part of the year. But I still love Sergio. He's still one of my favorite drivers. It's hard not to like the guy, but I'm giving him a B minus. And I think part of that is I know that he's got more in him, purely on results this year. It could have been a C, honestly. But like he really came through at the end for Max. So that was huge. And there were other times throughout the year where it was like, it was him up there helping out Max. And Bottas wasn't around, which is really what they needed from Checo. And I don't think Max wins the championship without Sergio. If he would have had another teammate that was just nowhere to be found all year, like it has been the last couple of years, he's not winning the championship without some backup. So, you know, part of that championship is Sergio's. That's why I'm sticking with the B minus for him. But I definitely would expect a lot more out of him next year. After having another full off season and time to work with the team. Because if not, then it's not going to be a good situation for him if he struggles like he did at times this year.
Yeah, I mean, for Sergio, I'm more of a B+, because I think, again, anybody going into that Red Bull second seat, there has to be a chunk of accepting of the role. And I think he clearly accepted the role more than a lot of other people who have sat in that seat has done for many years. The question is, can he then keep it up? And at some point, what then is the motivation for keeping it up? You can only be a super teammate for so long before you have to wonder, Is there more? And you mentioned it, James, you know, is there more in the tank for him? There could be. Is this all that there is? And maybe he's satisfied and you know, he just wants to be the ultimate teammate. We don't know that. You know, what I do think, the things that I've said that he had going for him going into that seat, he still has. He's not beholden to Red Bull or their academy. He's not beholden to I'm blanking on the name, but whoever. He's not beholden to anybody at Red Bull right now. So, yeah, I mean, and he's put his own stamp kind of on the second seat in terms of car setup and everything else. So he's going to have to continue to do that. Hopefully he can take a next step and be more in the championship four more consistently, because that's what's going to be expected of him, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see how that plays out. All right, so now for our first place team in the Constructors' Championship, we have Mercedes with 613.5 points. So for the driver battle breakdown here, we got Lewis Hamilton versus Valtteri Bottas. Hamilton with the race wins 18-4, qualifying won 17-5 over Bottas. Points 387.5 for Lewis, 226 for Valtteri. Both had at least one race win, so highest start and finish were first place for each of them. DNFs, however, one for Lewis Hamilton and three for Valtteri Bottas. So I'll hand it off to you first for the grades. But quick note, for their qualifying sector battle, was actually 50-16 in Lewis Hamilton's favor. So pretty good, which kind of what you expect from Lewis. So what do you got for the team grade?
In terms of a team, I'm giving them an A. They did actually win the Constructors after all. You know, it's lost in all the shuffle of the Abu Dhabi mess was the fact that, hey, Mercedes did win the Constructors. Points, I think, for in terms of the team getting better and better throughout the season, some very timely engine developments, I think, helped out as well. Obviously, the upgraded engine in Brazil doing its job. Carrying the team ultimately to the Constructors' win.
Fair enough. For me, I'm at an A-minus form, pretty much just because when you're the top of the sport for as long as Mercedes has been, anything less than the Drivers' Championship and the Constructors' Championship, you know, isn't acceptable, I guess. And I'm sure that's how they run their organization, probably why they're so awesome. So for that, I'll give them the A-minus. But I think it was a good year overall. I mean, they won the Constructors' Championship, so nothing to argue with there. But they weren't quite able to get Lewis over the hump. That is Max. So they didn't get to accomplish both of their goals. And, you know, it seemed like maybe there were some cracks in the Mercedes Foundation. Maybe I'm just kind of seeing things that aren't there because I'm hoping there is. But it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from what happened at the end of the season. Definitely glad they're not dragging that out any further with lawsuits and things than they needed to. I'm glad they put it behind them. I know a lot of the Lewis Army hasn't yet, but, you know, what else are you going to do during the wintertime, I guess, than talk about the previous season? So hopefully we can get past that by the time we start next year and then we have another epic battle on our hands. All right, so for individual grades for the drivers, for Valtteri Bottas, who finished in third with 226 points, I'm giving him a C+. I think that his time at Mercedes – obviously will be remembered as being successful as a team, because they won the Constructors every year he was there. But I think he left a lot to be desired there. He was in the best machine pretty much every year. I think every year he was at Mercedes, he was in the best car. And just, you know, he was a wingman, but a lot of times not even all that great of a wingman, I feel like, because he was nowhere to be found a lot of times. And just never that aggressive and just being disappointed in his results a lot. So C+ is what I'm going to give him. And I mean, are you that much far off from where I'm at?
Not really. I mean, I'm a little better, probably because of the counting stats. So I'm giving him a B-. I mean, you're going to look at his career with Mercedes and it's going to stack up really well against some really good names in Formula One because of the car and because he's not a bad driver at all. He's good. He's really good. He's very fast. But he finds himself too often following and not leading, particularly following and not being able to pass one Daniel Ricciardo, which I just thought was hilarious every time they would find each other on the racetrack, regardless of where they were on the track. Too many races where I think he just seemed to accept his fate. Well, I'm only good for seventh today, or I'm only good for fifth. So I'll just, you know, ride around and come home fifth. But never really pushing the envelope. So, you know, we talked about the ones that we think are have the ability to be great in the potential of the lower part of the grid are ones who outdrive the car. When did you ever say Valtteri outdrove the car today? I don't think I can ever remember ever saying that. So he's got some great stats to him. I think ultimately he's going to have a great ending to his career. I hope he goes to Alpha and finds the fire. I really do. I hope at Alfa Romeo he can be the team leader, and they put the car around him, and he finds the fire that got him into the Mercedes seat in the first place.
Yeah,
because I think he lost it.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so for then Lewis Hamilton, who finished in second place with 387.5 points, I'm giving him an A-, kind of the same reason I gave Mercedes an A-. I mean, if you're Lewis Hamilton, you go into the season with championship expectations, and if you don't succeed there, then you got to get a little bit of a knock. I think part of me still thinks that the end of the season shouldn't have been as close as it was. I think Lewis Hamilton got lucky in some spots, but I also believe that, you know, sometimes you create your own luck and you put yourself in a position to get that luck and then actually have to benefit from it. You know what I mean? And Lewis Hamilton's really, really good at that. Anytime that he was down and out, or maybe thought he might be down and out, like, not so fast. He's still right there. At the end of the season, he really turned it on, went to another gear, and made it just epically close. And, you know, in some people's eyes, did enough to win there at the end. But that's not what happened. And for that, I'm giving him an A-. So what do you got for him?
I am actually going to give him an A+, and I will tell you why.
John?
No. It has nothing to do with John. This has nothing to do with John, who's not here. The two times that I would have given him an A+ as a driver would be the 2 years that I actually didn't win the championship.
Really?
And because of the other gear that this guy is capable of doing and going to when you think he's down and out and it's over and done with. Stuff just happens and he keeps coming back. And that is something almost unworldly. I tell everybody, watch the races after Malaysia in the year that Rosberg wins the championship. Watch the races up until the last race of the season. And go ahead and watch the last race of the season and see how he's toying with the grid. Yeah. He's literally toying with the grid. He's on completely another level. It took longer than I thought for that other level to come out. But watch the sprint in Brazil. Watch the overtakes in Brazil in the real race of itself. That was just something I had never seen anything like that before. From last to first, that doesn't happen in Formula One, in modern Formula One. Yeah. You just don't see it. So for that, even though he did not ultimately, the points say he didn't win the championship, I've never seen the guy actually be better than when actually he didn't win. And for that, that's just special. And you don't have to like the guy, but if you don't want to respect that type of an effort, you're just choosing not to see. So for all that, I'm giving him an A+.
I hear you, and I respect your decision to give him an A+, Andy. All right, so that gives it. All right, that's it for the drivers and the teams. So now we'll go into some of our personal recaps or grades, I guess, reviews. So for the recap of the race predictions, our season winner, as mentioned in our Abu Dhabi review, was John with 58 points on the season. I, talking about turning on to another gear and really raging back through the field, I actually finished in second after being in last for most of the year with 54 points, Deanna with 53, and Andy bringing up the rear there with 50. So I know you'll have something to strive for next season. I just want one of us to take John off the throne there. So I'll be rooting for the field there for sure. Individual bet winners. As you may know, me and John had the bet to start the year who would finish with more points between Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. I almost felt bad taking the bet because I knew he stood no chance, and that's how it ended up. John did give me that bottle of bourbon. I've been drinking it, and it's been quite good. And then I believe you and Deanna had a bet, right?
Yeah, we were Norris versus Ricciardo, which one of the McLaren boys were going to come out on top. I had faith in my boy in Lando and being able to take the next step, which he appears to have done. And Danny Rick struggled a little bit more than I would have thought he would have. So, yeah, so I end up winning the battle of the McLaren team. And so we'll have to come up with something interesting and new for next year on that. So I'm willing to let it ride and willing to stake my whatever reputation I have out there.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to come up with some more for next season. That was fun while it lasted with Leclerc and Vettel, which wasn't that long. So that was even nicer. All right, so at the end of every race weekend, we always give out certain awards. So instead of doing this for the weekend, we're doing it for the entire year. A couple of these probably won't surprise anybody, but we're going to go through them anyway. And so for the season rubbish award, I'm simply just going to say the FIA. And if you don't know, then I don't think you watched the season. Andy, you could probably put it a little more eloquently than I can, so take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree. I think they were the proverbial rubbish of the season, simply because there were too many races, too many weekends. We had to talk about the FIA. I have a printout of the sporting regulations on my bookshelf now. Why? Because I keep having to look at them. And I've been sent rule 48 point whatever of the sporting code like four different times by five different other people. I could recite it to you at this point. That's not what we should be talking about. We should be talking about qualifying efforts, sector times, pit stop strategy, pit stops gone awry. That's where what I want to be talking about. I don't want to be talking about this. I mean, it's interesting and it's fun to research at a certain point, but I'm not a lawyer. And there's a reason I'm not a lawyer, because I don't like doing this type of work. So let's throw the rule book out. Let's write rules that make sense, that everybody can follow. We've got a growing audience. You've got a lot of potential here. Liberty's done a really good job of getting the sport in front of new and hungry and passionate eyeballs. Let's not muck it up. Let's keep the momentum going. Let's just have the FIA be the referee, and let's not ever talk about the referees.
That would be nice. All right. So for the yearly analysis paralysis award, kind of in the same vein for me, but I'm going to give it to Michael Massey, who just can't seem to make a decision and stick with it. He likes to waffle and him and haw, go back and forth with himself and sometimes with the team principals over the radio. So yeah, Michael Massey is the analysis paralysis award, maybe of the decade.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that one to Michael Massey. At some point I will probably at one point on the podcast describe my conspiracy theory about what I actually think happened in that room. But it's because he couldn't make a decision that we got to that point. So Michael Massey, analysis paralysis. It just seems like it's made for you this year, dude.
Yep. And then we move on to the dark horse of the year. This one was actually really tough for me. It was kind of deciding between Carlos Sainz and Pierre Gasly, Mr. Consistency versus just the revelation that he has been in AlphaTauri. So I'm going to give it to Pierre Gasly, just pure class all season, in a car that, you know, was very, very quick. But you can see the dominance over his teammates. So that's why I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, I will agree, and I will say Pierre Gasly as my dark horse of the year, simply because that's the award where we didn't see it coming, and boom, he's there. And there were so many times where you didn't see it coming, and boom, he's there. And he's there throughout the whole course of the weekend. And the Friday pace was real, and it was realized more often than not. And for keeping AlphaTauri in that constructors battle as long as he did was because of his effort. So the dude's clearly got the goods. There's a reason he was scouted as much as he was. Like I said, I hope the future is bright for him. I think it will come ultimately outside of Red Bull. But for all those reasons, Pierre Gasly, dark horse of the year.
And then for the overall driver of the year, I had a little bit of internal debate, but really there is no debate. It's Max Verstappen for me. He really was dominant this year. I think it was something like of the races he finished, there was only two that he wasn't in the top two. So laps led, all those things, all his P1s. I mean, he just had an awesome year. He fully deserved his first ever driver's championship. And it, you know, it sucks that a lot of people, you know, with the controversy at the end of the year, it just sucks that he doesn't truly get his shine and all that he deserved at the end. So that kind of sucks, but I'm sure he can look past that no problem. He is the world's driver's champion, and that'll always be said about him anytime he's mentioned, and that's pretty cool. And I'm sure he'll get a few more along the way to go with it. But yeah, I mean, he's my driver of the year, and that's all I got to say about that. So, where do you stand on this?
I think you the Lewis and Max show was one of those things where, like, I equivocated to almost like in like a Stanley Cup final in hockey, where you could play this thing 40 times and you might end up tied 39 of them. I think it's that close. So I don't know that I can necessarily separate them here, because those two were just in a class of their own all season. What an ungodly entertaining show these two guys put on the entirety of the year. It wasn't just a late championship run, an early championship run. I think these guys were only separated by, what, 20 points at one point?
Yeah.
Throughout the year, and then it tightened right back up. Yeah. Every time one of them would get a leg up, the other one would come back and come back with a vengeance. So for that battle, and we all, everybody, regardless of how you think the last race went, and I understand emotions and everything are super high about all that, just sit back and enjoy the racecraft and the knowledge and the show that these guys put on. You don't see this every year. It was a privilege to watch and cover this.
Yep.
So for that, Max and Lewis, drivers of the year.
All right, fair enough. All right, so now we go on to the best Grand Prix of the year. I had a little bit of a debate with myself on this one. I actually went back and watched some highlights of the races just to kind of remind myself a little bit. But at the end of the day, I'm going to go with the Hungarian Grand Prix, because the other one that was up there for me, I think you're going to pick because of the finish of it. So I'm going to go with the Hungarian Grand Prix. Wild start thanks to Bottas. Then an absolutely insane moment and picture of Lewis alone at the restart. You get Esteban Ocon getting a shock win thanks to Alonso just defending the shit out of Lewis, which was just some of the best racing of the entire year. And then Williams, to cap it all off, had double points in the race. So in a season of just epic races, I think the Hungarian Grand Prix kind of was like the microcosm of it all, and just the craziness and just not knowing what the hell's going on some of the times, and just completely just random things happening. So yeah, Hungarian Grand Prix for me. Where'd you land on this one?
For me, it's gotta be Monza. I mean, when you've gone 10 plus years, or however, you know, 2012 was the last time they won, was 9 years or something between sips of race victory champagne there. The monkey came off the back big time, in Monza there. 1-2, the only team to finish 1-2 all season in this crazy season. The race where I woke up, damn, I'm sure all of my neighbors, at 9:30 something in the morning, runner ups to that was, believe it or not, Bahrain, because we knew at that point this was going to be a different type of year. We knew Red Bull was real. And I think that was the first time in a long time where we actually said somebody's going to actually challenge Mercedes this year.
Yeah.
And boy, did we get a show. And then my bronze medal, Hungary, for the all-time shot of the one-person restart. If you can't sit back and enjoy just the absurdity of that shot, I don't know what else you could do. You want to talk about moments that made me laugh? I was dying laughing, yeah, watching that.
Like in like an end of season montage, like that's got to be like a big moment, you know, like if, yep, you show like a serious race fan that picture, they're just going to be like, yep, that yep.
That happened and we watched it.
Yep. That was a thing. It was crazy. But yeah, the Italian GP was my other one up there with it. But I figured you'd go with that with the 1-2. And like, it's crazy. I didn't even realize, or I had forgotten maybe, that was literally the only 1-2 for a team all year. So, man, if I would have told you that at the beginning of the year, that McLaren was going to have the only 1-2.
I'd have called you crazy.
Yeah, that would have been wild. But I probably could have won a lot of money if there was that bet out there somewhere. So
that's true.
Bummer. All right, so now we move on to the probably the homer pick for the homers, I guess we can call it, because it's the driver and team we're most excited about going into 2022. No surprise, I think, on either end of this podcast. But my team, Ferrari, and my driver, Leclerc, I think that they are going to take the next step, and I really hope that they put the right amount of focus into the 2022 regs and that they come out ready to go, and that Leclerc has that extra little push he needs from Sainz. And he takes off, and he's the one challenging for the World Drivers' Championship, which I know at least one other host of this podcast agrees with me on, but she's not here, unfortunately, to back me up with that. So, Andy, Why don't you tell us who you're most excited to see?
I am most excited, obviously, for my team from Woking, for McLaren. This is what they have been working for. The last 4 or 5 years have been leading to this reg change. It's all the moves that have gone behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, have all been leading kind of to this. They've got it all set up. It looks like they've got all the pieces in place. Does it bake? Does it turn into something great? Lando Norris, I think, is going to be the one that's going to get them there. Probably a little bit of still in front of Daniel Ricciardo. I think Daniel will bounce back next year, but I don't see him overtaking Lando. I think he's made the next step. The question is, can they get out? Can both Ferrari or McLaren get out to a fast start and make that and leverage that throughout the season to really, really compete for a championship?
Yeah, for sure. All right, I think that about does it for our season review and grades episode. So just a quick couple final thoughts. Make sure you join us next week for our Ask Us Anything episode. Continue to send us in those questions. It could be about anything, just not F1, our backgrounds, you know, where we grew up, other sports, things we like, because we are very passionate about other sports.
Yeah, you can ask us stuff about making the show, what our roles are in the show. All that's totally fair game. Just as long as it wouldn't get anybody fired. You know, how late have you really stayed up editing an episode? That's all fair game. By the dawn's early light is what I would tell you on that one. But it's all good. Just we want to keep it. Obviously, we're going to talk about nothing but F1 when we get into actual testing and real data and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as you also mentioned, we've got some really interesting stuff cooking for 2022. We are both very, very excited. We will be disclosing that hopefully sooner rather than later. But we've got some stuff in the hopper. 2021 has been by far the best year for the show. We're hoping to duplicate and go beyond that in 2022. So we're up for the challenge, and we're going to do our best to bring it and make this as awesome of an experience as we hope you've enjoyed up to this point.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. I'm very, very excited for what this next year, the next season has in store for us. And we want to keep doing the things that you all seem to like for whatever reason. I appreciate it, though. And you know, along with the questions you send us, send us comments about the show, what things you like, things you don't like. I mean, this is a very fluid situation. We're still growing the show, and we want to hear what you all like and don't like even. So we'll take all the constructive feedback you have, obviously the positive feedback too, but, you know, send that our way. But I think that's all we have for tonight. Andy, good luck tonight on all the editing. I wish I could stay up and help you, buddy, but I got to be up here in a few hours. So why don't you take us away?
Yeah, and as always, folks, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.